Welcome back, Legal Eagles. Today we're going deep on a case that, well, kind of throws a wrench into how we usually think about the Fourth Amendment.
Oh, yeah. United States v. Calandra. It gets right to the heart of, can you use evidence you got illegally, like to force someone to talk to a grand jury?
Yeah. Illegally obtained evidence, grand juries, a whole nine yards.
Yeah.
A real recipe for a legal showdown.
Totally. It's a classic example of trying to balance, you know, the government's power to investigate with those individual rights we hold so dear.
And the story behind Calandra is a wild ride. We're talking 1970. A raid on this guy, John Calandra's business. Federal agents, they're thinking illegal gambling.
Classic sting operation, right? But plot twist. They find something totally different.
Like what?
A ledger. A ledger that, well, it suggests maybe some loan sharking was going on, throws a whole new curveball into the investigation.
So naturally, they haul Calandra in front of a grand jury.
Exactly. Subpoena time.
Mm.
But Calandra, he's no fool. He knows he could end up incriminating himself. So he pulls out the Fifth Amendment, refuses to testify.
Smart move, right?
Oh, absolutely. Except the prosecutors, they had an ace up their sleeve. Transactional immunity.
I gotta admit, that one always trips me up a bit.
Right.
Break it down for us.
Imagine it like a get-out-of-jail-free card just for your testimony. It basically says anything you reveal on the stand, you can't be prosecuted for it.
So it removes that whole self-incrimination risk.
Pretty much. Makes it tough to stay silent.
But Calandra, he wasn't giving up that easily. He goes on the offensive, challenges the warrant used for that initial search, claims it was flawed, that the agents went way beyond what it allowed.
And get this, both the district court and the Sixth Circuit, they actually sided with him. They agreed there were problems with that warrant.
Wow. Talk about an upset. Setting the stage for, well, the big leagues, the Supreme Court.
Yep. This is where things get really interesting. The Supreme Court, they had to answer a question with huge E implications. Does the exclusionary rule, you know, the one that normally keeps illegally obtained evidence out of trials, does it also apply to grand jury proceedings?
So, can a witness be forced to answer questions based on bad evidence? Evidence that shouldn't have been admitted in the first place.
Exactly. And let me tell you, the answer, it might surprise you, in a 6-3 decision, the court ruled no. The exclusionary rule does not apply to grand jury proceedings. Shocker, right?
Wait, so while illegally obtained evidence can't be used to, like, directly charge someone at trial, it can be used to get them to spill the beans during the investigation phase.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. The majority, led by Justice Powell, they emphasized a key distinction. Grand juries, they're all about investigation, not determining guilt or innocence.
So, like, two separate sets of rules, almost. One for trials, one for these investigative proceedings.
Kind of. And the majority had their reasons. They argued the exclusionary rule is mainly about preventing bad police behavior in the future, not fixing past wrongs.
So deterring future misconduct takes priority.
Seems that way. They said the illegal search, well, that damage was already done. Excluding the evidence wouldn't undo the violation.
Right. You can't go back in time.
Exactly. And on top of that, remember, grand juries, they operate in secret. The majority argued that applying the exclusionary rule there would just make an already complicated process even more of a mess.
So they need some leeway to do their job effectively, even if it means bending the rules a bit.
That was their rationale. But, you know, there had to be some pushback, right? Enter Justice Brennan, a strong defender of individual rights, and he was not happy with this decision.
I bet. He probably saw this as a major blow to those Fourth Amendment protections.
Oh, absolutely. He argued the exclusionary rule, it's not just some technicality, it's fundamental to the Fourth Amendment. Allowing tainted evidence, even in a grand jury, well, he said it weakens the courts and could even encourage more misconduct.
So a slippery slope argument. If there are no consequences for illegally obtained evidence, why would law enforcement bother following the rules?
Exactly. And this is where it gets so interesting. You have these two opposing viewpoints. On one hand, prioritizing effective investigations, uncovering the truth. On the other, safeguarding individual liberties, making sure the process itself is just.
Such a classic legal dilemma.
Calandra really forces us to think about that balance. Where do we draw the line?
Well, we've definitely set the stage. The players, the stakes, the clashing legal philosophies. Now let's dig into the specifics of the majority and dissenting opinions, break down their arguments, and explore the real-world implications of this landmark decision. So we've established that Calandra really kind of flipped the script on how we usually think about the exclusionary rule. It's not as, like, impenetrable shield, right?
Right, it's nuanced.
But I'm still wrestling with how the majority, like, justified such a controversial decision.
Well, they had a few key points. They hammered home the idea that grand juries are, well, they're unique, secret, investigative, and they've got that power, you know, to force people to talk. They said using the exclusionary rule there would basically cripple investigations.
So, like, different rules for different parts of the game.
Yeah, you could say that. Inside the grand jury room, it's all about finding the truth, even if individual rights take a bit of a backseat.
Okay. And they also focused on the purpose of the exclusionary rule itself, right?
Oh, absolutely. For them, it was all about preventing future bad behavior by the police, not righting past wrongs. The search in Calandra already happened. Excluding the evidence, well, it wouldn't change that.
Right. No going back in time.
Nope. But I think Brennan's dissent really resonated. He seemed to see the exclusionary rule as more than just a rule, you know? It was about upholding the entire justice system.
It's about trust, right? In
right.
the system.
Exactly. He saw Calandra as, like, eroding that. Said allowing tainted evidence anywhere, even in secret grand jury proceedings, sends this message, you know, that the courts are okay with illegal police actions.
And that, well, that's scary. Could lead to even more misconduct if cops think they can get away with it.
It's a slippery slope, yeah. He felt strongly that grand juries, even with all their power, they still have to play by the rules. Fourth Amendment and all.
So we have this clash, this tension between, I guess, pragmatism, wanting law enforcement to be effective, and then this principal stance, protecting those individual rights.
And that's the heart of the issue. Calandra throws it right in our face. Where's the line? Security versus liberty.
Makes me wonder how it's actually played out, you know? Like, well, has Calandra led to bad outcomes? People indicted based on evidence that wouldn't have flown at trial?
Tough to say definitively. Grand juries are so secretive. But critics do say it creates a loophole. One that could encourage, well, let's just say creative police work.
A powerful tool that can be misused.
Exactly. And that's why Calandra is still so controversial. Those fundamental tensions, they're still there in the system.
So how has the legal landscape evolved since Calandra? Are there other cases that sort of build on this or push back against it?
Calandra is definitely part of a bigger trend, especially in the Burger Court era. You see this narrowing of the exclusionary rule, giving law enforcement more breathing room. One big case that comes to mind is United States v. Leon. It established the good faith exception.
Refresh my memory. What's that about again?
Well, think of it this way. If the cops get a warrant and it turns out to be bad, like there was a mistake, the evidence they got can still be used in court, but only if they truly believe the warrant was good, that they acted in good faith.
So even a faulty warrant, the evidence can still be okay.
If they were acting in good faith, yes. And you can see the connection to Calandra. Both prioritize, you know, that efficient law enforcement, even if it means some of those safeguards are relaxed.
I see that. It's a tricky balance, isn't it? You want cops to follow the rules, but you also want to see justice served.
It is. And those are the kinds of questions courts wrestle with all the time. Calandra, Leon, they all show us that. Protecting rights while keeping the public safe, not easy.
Plus, society's views play a role too, right? Like, in the Burger Court era, there was a lot of fear around crime. Probably impacted how the court decided things.
Oh, for sure. Context matters. Legal rulings, they don't just happen in a bubble. Social and political climate, it all feeds in.
So, Calandra is more than just this technical case. It's a snapshot of a moment in American history. The pendulum swinging, getting tough on crime.
Right. And we still feel the effects of that today. You know, the conversation continues. How much security, how much liberty, finding that sweet spot.
And it's always shifting, right?
Always. That's why it's so important to stay informed, to be part of this conversation about the justice system, and make sure it reflects what we believe in.
Well said. Now, let's dive into another layer of Calandra, those ethical dilemmas. Beyond the law, there's a whole other discussion there.
Absolutely. Calandra makes us ask, do the ends justify the means? Is it okay, ethically, to use evidence we know was illegally obtained, even if it leads to a conviction? Such a tough question. Of course we want to see the bad guys get caught, but not if it means compromising our values.
Exactly. And the court, well, the majority at least, they put a lot of weight on uncovering the truth, holding criminals accountable, even if it meant being flexible with procedure.
But Brennan, he argued that even a little flexibility can be dangerous.
Oh, yeah, he was worried about that. Yeah. He said even a small exception, like in Calandra, could erode public trust in the whole system, lead to way more abuses down the line.
And then it's not just about one case, right? It's about the message it sends, that the government can benefit from doing wrong.
Like a double standard. We have to follow the rules, but law enforcement, maybe not so much. Especially if they're catching bad guys.
Doesn't seem right.
And that's what makes Calandra such a great case study in ethics, those uncomfortable questions, you know? It forces us to think about the kind of justice system we want.
It's not just theory, either. These are real people's lives being impacted. The ethical choices we make as a society, they have real consequences. No doubt, Calandra forces us to think beyond the legal stuff and confront the bigger picture. Our values, our system, how do we want it to work?
Okay, let's make this concrete. Imagine this. The police, they illegally search a suspect's house, no warrant. They find evidence tying them to a big crime. Under Calandra, they could use that evidence to get the suspect to talk in front of the grand jury, even if it wouldn't be allowed at trial.
And that's exactly what critics of Calandra are afraid of. It's almost an incentive for police to bend the rules. They might think, even if we mess up, we can still use this evidence to pressure someone.
It's scary, right? Makes you think twice about asserting your rights if you think the police might retaliate.
And then there's that fairness issue again. Is it really fair for the government to use evidence they got illegally to build a case on that?
Feels like the whole idea of due process is being undermined.
It does. The government should be held to at least the same standard as everyone else, you would think.
So Calandra forces us to confront this tension, right?
Yeah.
Effective law enforcement versus individual rights. It's never easy.
And it's a conversation we need to have. Carefully and thoughtfully. It's complicated.
Now let's zoom out again, back to the Burger Court era. We talked about how they took a more, I guess, conservative approach to these issues. How much did that influence Calandra?
A lot. Remember, the Burger Court, under Chief Justice Burger, they were often trying to, you could say, rein in some of those expanded defendant rights that came out of the Warren Court years, and Calandra fits right into that pattern.
So Calandra was a sign of the times, huh?
Absolutely. Tougher on crime, that was the mood. And we see that in other cases from that era, too, like United States v. Leon, the good faith exception.
Uh-huh.
And Pennsylvania Board of Probation and Parole v. Scott. That one said the exclusionary rule doesn't apply to parole hearings.
So it was a whole movement, not just one case.
Right. This rebalancing act, pulling back on some of those protections. And Calandra is a big part of that story.
And it's still relevant, isn't it? It makes us think about the role of the courts, the limits of police power, what justice really means.
Exactly. The legal world is always buzzing about these things.
Now, before we move on, let's take a moment to reflect on Calandra's lasting legacy. How has this decision influenced how we view the balance between the power of law enforcement and the rights of individuals?
Calandra has had a deep and lasting impact, that's for sure. It's made it easier for the government to build cases, even if some of the evidence is, well, questionable because of how it was obtained. And that's raised some serious concerns about whether it's chipped away at our Fourth Amendment protections, especially in the context of grand jury proceedings where things are, you know, more secretive.
Yeah, so it's not just about legal technicalities, right? It's also about the big ethical questions Calandra raises. It makes us think about whether it's ever right to use evidence obtained illegally, even if it helps put criminals behind bars.
Exactly. And this discussion has had a ripple effect throughout the legal system, forcing everyone to re-examine that balance between effective law enforcement and protecting individual liberty.
Even though Calandra was decided decades ago, its impact is still felt today. It's a reminder that even the most technical legal decisions can have massive consequences. They shape not just the outcome of cases, but the very fabric of our society.
And our values as a society.
Wow, it's amazing, isn't it? Like, we've been on this journey through the legal system, all thanks to Calandra. Historical stuff, the balance between police power and individual rights, those ethical dilemmas. It's a lot to unpack.
It really is. And you know what's so fascinating is how one case, just one, can spark this whole conversation. I mean, we're talking due process, the exclusionary rule, what it even means to have a just system. It's kind of mind-blowing.
Totally. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing you hope listeners walk away with? The main takeaway?
I think it's got to be this. Calandra. It's not just some old case, you know, gathering dust on a shelf. It's alive. It's still shaping how the system works today. And I think it reminds us all that this balance between security and liberty, it's always shifting. Every legal decision has these consequences, these ripples that reach way beyond just the courtroom.
Yeah, it's like you throw a rock in a pond and those ripples keep going and going.
Exactly. And we can't just ignore them. We've got to understand them, especially if you're a lawyer or studying law. Talking about Calandra, debating it, that's how we make sure the system is truly just, protects individual rights. It's on all of us.
Absolutely. So to all our listeners out there, keep those legal minds sharp, those arguments strong, and never forget that ethical compass. The law, it's always changing. And Calandra shows us that the pursuit of justice, well, it's a journey, not a destination.
Well said. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive into United States v. Calandra. Hopefully everyone out there found it informative, engaging, and maybe even a little bit thought-provoking.
Definitely. Until next time, folks, keep those legal minds curious and keep questioning everything.